Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, here we are the day before Thanksgiving already. I don't know about you, but this month has flown by. And so if case I get jammed up and I forget, I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, and we have a lot to be thankful for in this country. Sometimes we just have to look at ourselves in the mirror critically and remind oneself of how great a country this truly is. We have a great show lined up for you today. Leslie Harris, runoff candidate in District B, will join us in the 12 o'clock hour. In the 11 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Michael Heck, as we do every Wednesday, as well as John Landrum, the VP of Innovation at Intralox, and Karen Kearney, the Director of Corporate Communications at Intralox. Governor John Bel Edwards and Intralox President Adele Blanks announced the company is investing $60 million to expand its Hammond manufacturing facility. In addition to expanding the facility, it looks like they will be creating 425 new jobs in Tangipahoa Parish, and that is great news. Joining us for the first half of this hour, Oliver Thomas. He's a runoff candidate for City Council District E. We met with Councilwoman Yen yesterday, and Oliver joins us today. Oliver, welcome to the show.
Man, hey, first of all, Newell, thank you, man, the WWL family, Helen and Diane, and gosh, I guess I've worked with the team over there for so many years, being on the show, trying to do a lot of critical issues from criminal justice reform to what's happening in our city with public policy. So it's good to be back. I think the last time I was on one of the shows there was with the late Kevin Kane of the Pelican Institute, Press Kabakoff, and some business leaders who were looking to deal with criminal justice reform there. So it's good to be back and good to be a guest on one of the most popular shows in this region.
Well, thank you, sir. Truly appreciate it. I want to give you a few minutes to introduce yourself to our audience.
I'm Oliver Thomas, candidate for City Council District E, born and raised in the lower Ninth Ward, currently live in Lake Willow in District E. Most of my family lives in either the Lower Nine or District E. Most of the property that my family owns. We grew up in a house at 1328 Andrew Street after moving around. Former city councilman, former city council president. Also on leave as the current host of the Good Morning Show on WBOK. Do a little work in the film industry and theater over the last 20 so years. Worked for an engineering and consulting firm over the last several years, and now a candidate. I'm number 72, and the motivation for stepping back into politics was looking at a lot of the disparities and what was going on in that district. And, you know, you and I spoke briefly at lunch the other day just to see probably one of the proudest, fastest growing, the largest African-American municipal district in the state. Whoever would have thought that District E would be number one in murder, number one in dumping, number one in crime, number one in disparity. And as well as if you listen to or read the report from LSU demographers, folk who could afford to stay starting to leave that area. So I just thought it was essential and important that maybe someone with some institutional knowledge, some relationships. I'm a former legislator of the year and understanding how to use policy and budgeting to impact the community with the work we did in the Lower Garden District, Lower St. Charles Corridor, Central City, just to give the citizens an opportunity to vote for someone who not only understood and came from that district, but had the resume and legislative background to make a difference. Of course, and most folks who follow government know that we have a strong mayor, strong council form of government. The city council, as much as work as they do with social service and helping people, the charter job of the city council is land use, zoning, budgeting, appropriation. They're the fiscal agent. And city council even has subpoena power. We've seen how strong councils with strong mayors can best impact the community and make a difference. That's why you have the different branches of government. So I've offered myself at number 72 to be a candidate, ran first in the primary, won every precinct in the lower ninth ward, won the majority of the precincts in New Orleans East, and looking to be honored to serve as a city council member for District E.
Oliver, obviously leadership is about trust, so let's just deal with one of the elephants in the room. I get a lot of texts here. You know, I don't really entertain it much. My feeling is you serve your debt to society. The law is the way it is. It allows you to return to society and engage in this process. What do you tell those that are kind of on the fence that are trying to figure this out one way or the other?
Man, I am honored. I think Silas Lee and Dr. Chervenick said it best and on WDSU a week ago when kind of analyzing my race, said, I pay my debt to society. I've worked hard to change my life, to be a better version of me politically, personally, as a husband, a father, as a man, as a community advocate. And I asked for a second chance. Of course, the citizens and the residents and the voters of the district voted for me overwhelmingly in many cases to run first against an incumbent. So I don't want to take advantage of their confidence. And I wanted to be the best me knew that I think can impact the district with more promise and more opportunity, man. When you look at the waterways there, when you look at Bayou Sauvage, when you look at the strength in those 27 subdivisions of those communities for people who are upper middle class and middle class and working class, the potential for 5 miles of beach there, 7,000 potential developable acres of a business park, two of the busiest waterways. I don't want to take advantage of that trust, and I definitely don't want to make sure that I'm doing everything I can not only to earn it, but to maintain it.
Oliver, the other day when we crossed paths at lunch over at one of my favorite places, Martin's Wine Cellar, it was good to see you, but not unlike a lot of other conversations, and I think you felt the same way, we immediately moved to the conversation of crime.
Yes.
And, you know, you had some thoughts. Where do you see that as one of the leading issues for you if you're fortunate enough to be elected on the council?
Yeah. Well, think about it. Remember what Central City was like in the middle to late 90s and early 2000s. It was the murder capital of the world. And I represented that area. And we had Memorial was in office. Chief Pennington came in. We paid a lot of attention. We had the federal weed and seed program, worked with the former crime commissioner, James Carter. And we had two trains running. You know, the late African-American playwright August Wilson talks about the duality of life. But while we were fighting crime, I won the national award for mentoring with the Boys and Men Mentoring Program, where we were changing the lives of the kids. I told the principal at Wilson, give me the kids that the system doesn't want. We were able to stabilize that school and that community. We did a lot of outreach. You'll remember it because with your job and in your career, the Calio Housing Development had 35 murders in the 6 or 7 block area. The outreach we did, working with the schools, working with the Weed and Seed, working with investment, working with the ministers, the next year was one. The murder rate was dropped 60%, double the national average. New Orleans was leading the way. You had special task force that were going after the bad actors. But you also had some of the stuff that we were doing with outreach. I've already met with a couple of principals to do conflict resolution in those schools. I was chair of the conflict resolution task force then. So, you know, I think we have to do both. We have to have aggressive law enforcement to keep people safe, especially when you talk about violent crime. But I've developed a reputation and won awards for also working with at-risk youth and young folk to make sure that a life of crime isn't an option, but they have other options and they know they can change their life. I think we need that type. Whoever would have thought, especially with the big four housing projects uptown, that New Orleans East, which 1979 Times 50 an article says the East, blacks on the move up. Whoever would have thought it would supplant Central City, which was once called the Bucket of Blood, as a place that leads this region in murder and crime. I don't think any of us would have predicted that.
In 79, I lived in the East.
That's right.
So it was very interesting. This council coming in is going to be faced with a continuing issue, and it's an issue in the sheriff's race right now, this special needs facility. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I've always been one that you need both to deal with crime and serious crime, but you also need opportunity to do prevention and outreach. With the special, I am not for putting more people in jail. I'm for putting the right people, especially the ones that are violating our rights, robbing us, affecting our life and limb and property. So that's something that I really want to sit down with the sheriff, sit down with the mayor, sit down with our council with. But I'm also in favor.
So as of right now, you don't have a position on that issue?
Right now, I actually don't have a position on that issue. As a matter of fact, this is the first time I've been faced with that particular question in an interview. I've dealt with my other positions about how we begin to fight the crime and violent crime in our community. But it's what relates to the jail facility. I need to spend a lot more attention to detail in terms of the pros and cons of that and how we deal with that.
One of the other issues there's a lot of conversation about, and it's just kind of incredulous to me, thinking back to when Mitch Landrieu came into office, we were talking about blighted housing, and that there were somewhere between 20 and 30,000, and the most recent report, I think, still has the number in a very similar, number that's out there, and it just doesn't seem like there's been much movement. The East has its challenges, maybe not as much as some other areas as it relates to blighted housing. But what do you see as being the best way forward in dealing with this issue?
We have to come to some agreement and relationship with the state. As well as I do, that many of our city or parish charters or constitutions, when you talk about revenue, how we raise revenue and how we tax, as well as how we deal with the rights of property owners, are tied to the state constitution. We've had several bills that were aggressive, Wesley Bishop's bill and many others that would pass in our region or in our area, but would fail statewide. We have to do better work with the Speaker of the House, the leaders of the Senate, and the governor to talk to our neighbors throughout this state about why, especially because of our social ills and our conditions in dealing with blight, why we need to be treated differently here. I want to use those relationships that I've had. I've been endorsed by many of our legislative leaders, those who have those kinds of relationships. And I'd like to maybe get some of those policy measures back on the ballot again, or get them to relax some of the rules so that we would have more control over how we dispense property. I was successful several years ago. So if you remember, the redemption period used to be 3 years. We got to reduce to 18 months. And in cities around this country, man, the redemption period is a couple months. You got blighted property, you haven't paid taxes on it, and you're not doing anything with it. You got a couple of months to respond to someone else who's going to invest in upkeep and maintenance of the property has access to it. I think 21st century policies like that, but strong relationships, man. We don't need to be embattled with our legislature. And we don't need to be embattled with our state senator or governor. We need to have cooperative relationships with them that at least recognize the differences in the largest urban metropolitan area and some of the issues that we have so that we can have freedom and the ability to tackle them differently, to mitigate them and improve. That's what I want to do.
Do you have a sense of frustration with the speed in which we address some of these issues? I mean, why has there been hesitancy relative to this blight remediation and taking pieces of property and taking possession of them as the city and proactively putting it back into the stream of commerce. And I haven't seen a lot of exigency, and I'd love to hear what you think about this from the council perspective, really, around crime. I mean, it's like I say this all the time. That's what I would be talking about for the first 90 minutes of every day, because that just really impacts everything else that the city does.
Well, I think, Bingo, you hit the nail on the head. You know, some people look at a strong council, strong judiciary, strong administration, or especially if you're an administrator. Some folks take a strong council as being anti-administrator, a strong council that understands land use, zoning, budgeting, that has the ability to plan and legislate and affect public policy and deal with accountability is actually a plus. We saw that in the 90s, and we saw that with other administrations. We see it with other parish presidents and council and governments, that the stronger your legislative branch is, it's actually a plus or an asset to a community. It is usually the every administrator usually wants to have their way. And I understand that. As big a fan as I was of President Obama and many other presidents, it's a good thing you have a Congress and a judiciary, because those different branches were there for a reason. I think the council needs to be more active. There are best practices that happen around this nation that if you understand your legislative responsibility, you are learning what other cities are doing. A lot of the stuff that I was successful at, that I won awards for as a legislator, it wasn't because I was so creative or the smartest person in the world. I reviewed what other cities did. Don't remember the joint task force we had in the 90s and early 2000s, where we worked together with the Harbor Police, the Levee Police, joint task force with Jefferson Parish, joint task force with the federal government to aggressively attack where crime and crime trends were. Why don't we have those cooperative agreements again? When you look at budgeting and appropriation.
So you favor hotspot policing?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that is happening is that we take a look at how we disperse police, right, evenly throughout the community. Well, why would I have an even amount of police everywhere and not more police where most of the crime is happening? I mean, you explain that one to me. I mean, that's
commonsensical to me. I mean, you're preaching to the choir.
You know, so I have thought that, especially for New Orleans East and the Lower Ninth Ward, it's the largest municipal district in terms of land mass, right, of any urban community, metropolitan area in this region, okay? So why would you use the same formula that you use for the other districts? Just calls for service and drive time and call time will eat up a lot of your response, whether you're successful or not. So Chief Harrison, several years ago, and you know the PERF conference every year where the chiefs of the largest cities participate in developing a national plan. Well, when they were working on the 21st century policing plan years ago, each chief was tasked with bringing a citizen to the conference with them to work on that plan that they thought understood budgeting and policing. Guess who Chief Harrison took with him? He took me because of my knowledge, because of some of the work we've done, and because this is something that I've spent some time learning. There are about six or seven core principles of policing, and I know two that add to recruiting are your officers have to be your number one ambassadors, so they have to feel safe and comfortable in their job. And you have to have a pipeline for recruitment, dealing with agencies that can continue those pipelines. So I like to use some of my knowledge there to help. I just want to help. What we have right now, we're not growing. If you're not growing, you're stagnant. If you're stagnant, you're dying. So anyone that doesn't want to keep us safe, that doesn't want to institute policies to help us grow, they may be worried about their political position. They're not worried about this community.
Yeah. I have often wondered whether or not the ills of the Sewage and Water Board have been governance. And when we pass from administration to administration, the focus changes, sometimes the mission, the vision changes, and we're stuck on stuck. Your thoughts?
I think it's time to take another look at the governance structure. I think early on, it was a state-created agency. It was municipal. Its own municipal agency, that kind of sat along, created by the state back then. I think we have to revisit that now. Why? Because the system is 100 years older. There's been neglect in terms of maintenance. And I think the question of do we have the capacity to make sure that that's the best agency while we're putting Band-Aids on other agencies. So I think it's time, and I think the citizens are comfortable with that from what I've heard, because, you know, it's obvious whether it's government neglect, whether it's mismanagement, whether it's the fact that we've just kind of not paid the right kind of attention to it for the last several decades. Something different needs to be done. I often tell a joke when I'm meeting with groups. It's almost like when you had community people on the board, it operated better than with all these quote-unquote experts that are on the board. You know, at least community people were protecting the interests of citizens in terms of rate increases where systems were broken. And then if you go back even further than that, you know that the captains of industry, man, and the early engineers and builders here, whether it's in Old Jefferson or in Orleans, they built systems that were modeled around the world. They traveled from Australia to the Netherlands to South America to help them build their system. So something's gone awry, something's gone wrong when the premier system that helped design other systems around the world is in such disrepair that people don't know whether they're going to get safe water or have a sanitary system, a sewer system. That's potentially dangerous to the civilization in the region.
Oliver, I know you have to leave us because you moved your schedule around in order to accommodate, because I wanted to get the two candidates as close together as possible. We appreciate same. Final
thank
thoughts.
Thank you. No, just a final thoughts. I think, first of all, I want to thank all the residents of District E, the Lower Nine in New Orleans East, for having enough confidence in me and believing me enough to give me another chance, man, to mitigate some of the social ills and problems in this district. Use public policy and use a strong council to work with the mayor to move the city forward and grow it. We have to begin to increase our population. We have to have a city where people want to stay, and not only want to stay, but people want to invest in and grow. If we don't do that, we're never going to have a sustainable community that can move forward in not just this 21st century, but in any century. And if we're not safe, we can't be anything. And if we can't attract and keep the young talent that we have, we're going to continue to be a city where people pass through, like the 19 million visitors who passed through before COVID, like the millions of people who passed through for Mardi Gras and special events. I'm not acceptable, and I don't accept that we're passed through. I accept that our culture and the people here are too important for folk to pass through and money to pass through. I think it's time for good fortune and sound government and sound policy to pass through. That's the kind of city and region that number 72 that Oliver Thomas wants.
If you would just indulge me one second, because I asked Cindy Nguyen this question, I want to make sure I ask you real quick, yes or no. Right. You support the library tax?
Absolutely.
You support the housing tax?
Absolutely. Chinese civilization rule, you can judge the level of civilization in a community by how they do two things, treat their old people and treat their library and educational institutions.
All righty. Well, thank you, sir. Best of luck to you. Oliver Thomas, runoff candidate, City Council District E. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bless you and your family, Lou.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Oliver Thomas, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870. On the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.